I feel like Amanda's like my little service angel, because I used to be really involved in service, and then I went to grad school, and, you know, she keeps popping up and, like, asking me to do things. Yeah, I got sober July 31st, 2003, my home group is Young and Wise, so the Young and Wise group, which has been my home group the whole time I've been sober, except the first month when I was in New York City. And this was my home group, too. I didn't really know the concept of a home group when I first got sober. I just went to every single young people's meeting, every week, every business meeting, fellowship after every single one. So, you know, I guess they were all my home groups. But you know, just to tell some of my story, I'm from San Francisco, and both my parents are alcoholic, and I had a lot of warnings about it growing up. I was determined to not ever drink. That was my plan. That lasted until age 14, which I thought was actually pretty late, you know? Most of my friends have been drinking for years. So I was a freshman in high school, and I was at a house party, and I had all these convictions, you know? And what happened was somebody just, like, put a shot of vodka in front of me, and I just drank it. You know, all of my convictions just flew out the window in the face of this drink in front of me. And that described, like, every single drink I ever took after that, you know. All of the reasons why I shouldn't and the evidence for why that I shouldn't became more and more clear and built up a lot more and more, you know. They just flew out the window when I had the drink in front of me. I don't know where they went, but... So I drank alcoholically that night, you know. I drank too much. I drank more than everybody else. I didn't ever want to stop. And, you know, so for a while it was like, oh, I just need to learn how to drink properly. And then that idea went okay for a little while with my friends, you know. It was like okay that I was always the one, like, you know, barking or weeping or cracking my head open on the sidewalk or, but it got old pretty quick, with the people that I was drinking with, and it's so weird, none of my friends were alcoholic, like, I was the only one, so it was really obvious, and clear, like, I made amends to my best friend, you know, when I got sober, and she said to me that when I drank, it was like a light switch went off. Like, she saw it happen. Like, I would start drinking, and it was like a switch, and my personality just changed. And that was really interesting, like, you know, hearing her say that, that she saw that right from the beginning. And she did not have that experience with alcohol, you know? Like, there was a lot of... I would compare myself to her, because I'm like, I don't understand. You know, she would walk away from a drink that had, you know... alcohol still left in the glass, and I just could not. We would talk about it a lot. I'd just be like, I can't understand how you can do that. And she'd be like, I don't understand why you can't do that. She just didn't get it. She's not alcoholic, and so you know, I only drank for 3 years. You know, I drank for the rest of high school. I was miserable throughout high school, and I was really like a binge drinker. I didn't drink daily until the very end. And so, you know, throughout the week, I just like wanted to die all the time. And then in the weekend, I would drink. And then I would like want to die more afterward. So I just like really wanted to die a lot all the time. You know, I did a lot of shitty stuff. A lot of really harmful things to myself, like running around, you know, running around San Francisco like a 17-year-old girl, you know, going to clubs and bars and, you know, hanging out with really not people that were really harmful and you know, just doing a lot of stuff that I shouldn't have been doing at that age, and I really should, you know, shouldn't be doing ever, like, and I, you know, one of the, I mean, this is my world, right? Like, this is the world that I had when I was drinking, so it's like I didn't, like, you know, have my children taken away from me, or I didn't have, like, those things happen in my world, but in the world that I was in at that age, you know, certain things happened that were really horrible for me, and, like, one of them was, you know, like, I lost my best friend, this person that I was talking about, she was, meant everything to me, you know, my family was totally fucked, her family was totally fucked, and we just, like, bonded together, and we were just, like, everything to each other, and, on her 18th birthday party, she came from a Russian family, and it was, like, 50 Russian people just, like, drinking vodka, and there was, like, a handle of vodka for every 3 people, like, down the banquet table, and you could just pour your own, and that's, like, a really bad idea for me, and I just kept pouring, and I remember just, like, watching my hand just, like, kept pouring, and I kept pouring, and I felt like they were, like, not my hands, like, I had no control over what I was doing, and I got so drunk that the restaurant had to, like, call an ambulance and whatever, and I just remember, like, being outside in the sidewalk with her, and, like, people were shouting, they're like, Joanna, like, we're about to blow out the candles on your cake, like, where are you? And I just had this moment where I was like, I'm never going to drink in front of you ever again. I didn't say I'm never going to drink again, I said I'm never going to drink in front of you ever again. And I really meant it, and, you know, and then, like, a month later, we drove down to Southern California, we were looking at colleges together, it was, like, fun. And of course we met these shady dudes, because that's what we do, and we went back to their house, and they were making, like, apple martinis, they really knew how to cater to 17-year-olds, you know, he put the drink in my face, like, just like that vodka shot, you know, and I just, like, threw it back, and she was right there, like, looking at me, and I don't know, you know, like, I made this promise, and it just flew out the window, and, so, you know, that happened, she stopped talking to me, and then I just felt like, she was, like, the only thing that I felt like I had besides alcohol, so then I just felt like all I had was alcohol, and I was just, like, all alone in this world, and, oh my God, so many, like, you know, I remember this one guy that I ended up with, you know, one night, like, I just started, like, sobbing hysterically to this stranger, you know, just, like, about how, like, I just, like, wanted to die, and, like, my life was just such a mess, and, like, whatever, and then I was like, will you be my boyfriend? I like look back at the people that I ended up dealing with, and I feel so incredibly grateful, because I mean I have friends who, you know, had knives pulled on them out at these clubs and stuff, and people trying to whatever, like, really bad stuff happened, and, you know, I had this guy who just looked at me and was like, oh, you are fucking nuts, and he drove me home, he looked at me and he was like, you need help. like, before you even think about wanting to be in a relationship with another person, like, you need to, like, help, and for whatever reason, of course, I could hear it from this guy that I liked. And so what ended up happening is I had this school counselor, and I was honest with her about how I drink. And from pretty early on, she kind of looked at me kind of like, you know, with that knowing look when I would talk about alcohol. She had I guess her sister was in AA, and she said to me when I was, like, 15, she was like, I think you're an alcoholic. And there's something in me that I just, like, knew that she was right somewhere in me. And, but I pushed it away, you know, and I kept drinking. And, what ended up happening is she staged this, like, intervention, because I was, you know, a danger to myself and others. you know, they got everybody in a room, like, my parents and all my teachers and everything, and she just said, your daughter's a very sick girl, and she needs help, and she should not, you know, my plan, I was going to New York City to go to college, and she's like, she should not do that unless she gets help. And so the plan was to go to rehab, but I, like, you know, manipulated that down because I was like, too much for me. So I decided I was going to go to Santa Fe where my mother lived. My mom is sober. And I was going to go there and go to outpatient. And the plan was, you know, that I would just do that and get everybody off my back. Like, that was why I was doing it, not because I wanted to actually get help. And then moved to New York City where I knew nobody and just continue. You know, something happened. That was different from my plan. I went, you know, and I started going to AA meetings, started going to outpatient rehab in northern New Mexico. I mean, there's a huge alcoholism, like, epidemic, and there's so many DUIs. And I was in this outpatient rehab with all these people who were, like, 20 years older than me, who had, like, ankle, you know, monitors, who had, like, lost their children, who lost their licenses, who were, you know, just... And I had this real, that was like the beginning of a spiritual experience for me, I think, because I had this bizarre thing, I don't know where it came from, where I didn't look at them and think, like, that's not me. I looked at them and I was like, that will be me. Like, I'm no different from these people. And I started going to meetings and didn't talk to anybody and, you know, eventually started, like, being the sobbing person in the back, so people started talking to me, and you know, I just got so much help that summer. I was only there for, like, a month, but people just helped me so much. But then when I had, like, 30 days, I was in a meeting, and I was about to move to New York City, you know, and the meeting topic that night was spiritual experience, and I was listening to the speaker saying, oh, and I have to say, too, like, so they told me I needed a higher power, and so I decided my higher power was the moon, and checked that off the list. So I didn't know that I needed to, like, do anything else, like, pray or talk to the thing or, like, do anything else. I just, like, checked off my list. I got a moon keychain. It was, like, good. And the topic was spiritual experience, and this guy was up there, and he was saying that he didn't care whether there was a God or not. It didn't really matter to him anymore. All that mattered was that he acted as if there was, and that that worked, and that he didn't drink when he did that in his life, but better. And I was like, what a chump. And I walked, I just, like, couldn't hear that. And I'm like, these people are crazy. you know, they're crazy. I walked away from the meeting, and I was like, I am going to drink. Like, I can't do this. And, you know, it was Santa Fe. I knew in San Francisco where I could go to drink underage, but I didn't know this town. I didn't know where to go. And so I started walking, trying to find a place that seemed like they would let me in. And I found this one club, and I tried to go in the front door, and the bouncer stopped me, and he was like, hey. And it was this guy, Tate, who was at, like, every meeting that I'd gone to that summer. I really relate to, like, the doorknob thing, because I was like, you know, I was totally floored by that. And he looked at me in the eye, and he was like, do you think that maybe there might be maybe something out there looking out for you, or, like, some forces of good, you know, like, out there? And I just said maybe. It was like, I was like, highly unlikely, probably a coincidence, but maybe, you know, maybe. It was like the first little chink in my armor. And so then I moved to New York City, and I had, like, 23 days. And I moved to New York City, and I moved into a dorm, and that was totally wild. And I went to the Gramercy meeting. It was, like, my first meeting in New York, and it was, like, all these old people, and I was just not, I wasn't going to do it. I really wasn't. I wasn't going to do this. I couldn't deal. It was way more fun stuff happening at the dorm, you know. And but this girl was there who was young, and she came up to me, and she was like, hey, like, you know, there's, do you know about young people's meetings? And clearly I didn't. And she's like, you should come. You know, there's one tomorrow night. And I went, and my first young people's meeting was Young People's Step, and I went out to the diner afterward and just got totally hooked on young people's AA. I mean, I started, like I said, like I started going to young people's meeting every night and fellowshipping every single night. I was also like going to the midnight meeting, thank you, on Houston Street, because I worked at Lowe's movie theater. That was my first civil job. And I would get off work at like 10 or 11, so I'd go to the midnight meeting every night too, and hang out at Esperanto. I don't know if anyone here remembers this, but there was this coffee shop on McDougal Street where all the sober people would hang out. And it just became my life, and I loved it. And, coming to this meeting was like, it's funny, I was so nervous, so weird. Like, I was like nervous. I'm like, why am I so nervous? It's because you're also still. Like, there's a lot of different faces here. I don't know, when I used to be here regularly, but you're all still so fucking cool, you know? Like, this is the cool meeting. It's like the cool people. And when I got here, the person that makes a diner announcement was this really like cool girl with like a midriff, and she was wearing roller skates, and she would like, you know, pass out the mic like on her roller skates, and we used to literally call that commitment diner girl. That would never fly now. It had to be like a cute girl. And I was just like, this is what I always wanted. Like, I wanted to be with people that I like, that I think are cool, and fit in, be a part of, and I felt that here. And you know, I thought my life was over. It totally wasn't. Like, you know, I remember people just, probably a lot of it was bad news, but you know, I remember we went to clubs. Like, we went to that club that's like a shopping mall now, that church on 6th Avenue. And I promptly lost all my sober friends, and I was alone in this like club with people like blowing, like doing coke, and like I think our phones didn't work in there. I was just lost and just wandering through all the rooms like I'm gonna die. And but that was like, I don't know. And we ran around, like I dated a lot of inappropriate men, and you know, broke up with inappropriate men in AA, and like didn't want to go to the meeting because they were there, and like, you know, we're all like dating each other and breaking up with each other and just like losing friends, getting back, you know, it was like a mess. But we were young and we were sober and we were staying sober. And I'll say too that I had no idea that how lucky I was that, you know, in young people's meetings in AA, I mean in New York, we're so you know, in the traditions are such a huge part of what we do here. Business meetings are run like, you know, do you guys know what other business meetings are like in some other groups and some other places? They're very, very different. I just remember, like, there's this guy Clay too, and he had been around a long time. He was such an elder statesman, man. Like, he would just sit there in the back of the business meeting and like, you know, you wouldn't say anything a lot, for the most part. And we'd get into trouble, we'd be like fighting over something, and we'd be like, then we would turn to him, you know, and he'd be like, well, you know, this is how we've done in the past. and we'd be like, okay, you know, I learned so much in these business meetings about how to deal with others and be a small part of a greater whole, and like, I became someone that had a voice. I was so quiet and terrified of everybody, and felt like I had nothing to say or contribute. And here in AA was the first time I felt like I had a voice, and I started like having a lot of opinions after a couple years, and talking a lot at the business meeting, and that was so huge for me. And thank you. I will say too, I didn't really do college that well because I was here. I didn't go to class a lot, but I got through it, and I regretted that actually for a long time. I felt like I fucked up. After college, I just started like dog walking and waitressing for like years. And I just felt like I didn't know what I was doing in that part of my life, so I just really was like good at AA, you know, and I really loved AA, and I felt so good here, but I felt like, what was I doing the rest of my life? And I feel not, I don't have any regret about that now. I was in such a deep hole that I needed to climb out of it, you know, and I needed to do that with you guys and AA and working the steps and God. And I'm, you know, now I do get to, like, I finally am doing all these things, thank you, that I never ever thought I could do. I mean, I'm, like, married. I got married last year. I'm, like, in grad school for this crazy thing, this art thing, you know, that I always wanted to do. And my life is totally unrecognizable. I'm, like, old. So eventually I was able to go out into the world and, like, apply these principles out there, you know, and I get to do that, and it just took, you know, it took a little while, and so anyway, thank you.
And now we have Rob.